Looking for a resource written for young people that explains the Mormon religion from a biblical worldview? Mormonism 101 for Teens by Mormonism Research Ministries' Eric Johnson addresses basic LDS doctrine while answering important questions such as, is it okay to date my Mormon friend? This book will help you better understand what can otherwise be a complicated religion. Mormonism 101 for Teens, available at the Utah Lighthouse Bookstore in Salt Lake City or purchase online at mrm.org.
Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
Welcome to this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry. With me today is Eric Johnson, my colleague at MRM. This week we were looking at an article that was first published by the Washington Post titled, Mormon Church Has Misled Members on $100 Billion Tax-Exempt Investment Fund, Whistleblower Alleges. I think we've pretty much exhausted that story, but it does raise an interesting concept, Eric, and that is, it's well known that the church, because it's so large, is also a very wealthy institution. And we've introduced D. Michael Quinn's book, and as you mentioned yesterday, D. Michael Quinn is not an enemy of the church. Even though he was excommunicated from the church in 1993, he still considers himself to be, as was mentioned yesterday, a DNA Mormon. And he's written a lot of fascinating books on the LDS leadership and the church at large. And this book that we were referring to recently is one that came out in 2017, which deals with the church as a corporate entity.
The title is The Mormon Hierarchy, Wealth and Corporate Power.
Well, since we're talking about this $100 billion that was discovered or made known by this whistleblower who worked for this investment company owned by the church, let's talk a little bit about the fact that the Mormon Church, that we know is a very wealthy institution, how does it spend its money? And how did it spend its money, let's say, even in the early years? I find this to be fascinating because some of the things that D. Michael Quinn talks about would certainly crush a lot of the stereotypes that many members have regarding their own church. And one of those stereotypes has to do with this myth that the LDS leadership is not compensated for the time that they give to the church. Many members of the church still to this day insist that their leaders, the general authorities, are volunteer workers for the church. But Quinn doesn't believe that, and he gets right into it on page 2 of his book.
I'm going to say even maybe some of the people who are getting compensated will not admit to that. I was talking to a mission president's wife, and she insisted that she was a volunteer, even though there is compensation, not a salary per se, but they get their expenses reimbursed. And so we've talked about that before on the show, to six figures, what the mission president will get. So even the people who are getting the compensation are not acknowledging that.
And I think it's because there's a big semantical game going on here. And Quinn talks about that, and I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but let's look at what he has to say on the bottom of page 2 of his book.
He says, beginning in 1836, quote-unquote, hireling priests was a derogatory reference to modern Christianity's ministers in publications by the Mormons.
Well, let me stop you there. It was not just in publications by the Mormons. That kind of a stereotype was talked about in the Mormon temple ceremony prior to 1990. There was a character in the temple who represented a Christian minister, and of course it was alluded in the ceremony itself that Lucifer was paying these Christian ministers to preach false doctrine. In other words, having a paid ministry is certainly something that is a part of what they would call the great apostasy.
He goes on and mentions Luke 10:7, which says that the laborer is worthy of his hire. And Quinn writes, from September 1830 to November 1834, Joseph Smith repeated that New Testament phrase in four written documents he dictated as revelations from God. The last, Doctrine and Covenants, section 106, verse 3, specified that such financial support or hire was for any church officer who would, quote, devote his whole time to this high and holy calling, end quote.
Well, let me just read from section 106, since that's the reference that Mr. Quinn uses. In section 106, this is supposedly a revelation given through Joseph Smith the prophet at Kirtland, Ohio, on November 25th, 1834, and it's referring specifically to a Mormon member by the name of Warren A. Cowdery. It says, "It is my will that my servant Warren A. Cowdery should be appointed and ordained a presiding high priest over my church in the land of freedom and the regions round about." It says in verse 3, "and devote his whole time to this high and holy calling, which I now give unto him, seeking diligently the kingdom of heaven and its righteousness, and all things necessary shall be added thereunto. For the laborer is worthy of his hire." Now, when we read of the laborer being worthy of his hire, in this section, it has a reference to Matthew 10:10. And, of course, the context is certainly speaking that a person who is working to do a certain job should rightfully be compensated for the labor that they are giving towards that job. That's the context.
Bill, we've been talking about this $100 billion fund of investment money that the church has in Ensign Peaks, and we have references in the Doctrine and Covenants that bishops are supposed to be paid, but we have to understand there are thousands of men who are serving as bishops or branch presidents in the different wards and branches throughout the world who get no compensation. And I'm just wondering, if we're going to say that the laborer is worthy of his hire, then what about those men who put out such effort? They might not give 40 hours a week, but I'm sure, I mean, if you're a bishop of a ward, you have up to 500 people. It's got to be at least 30, 40, could be 50 hours on top of your real job.
Forget the hours. How about being compensated for the headache of being over 500 people?
Oh, my.
That's got to be pretty strenuous and intense at times for these bishops. I feel for them. And I can understand that that is a pretty important position on a local level. But even though the Doctrine and Covenant says that these local leaders should be given a just remuneration for all their services, the church really doesn't do that any longer. And perhaps that is why these funds of like $100 billion that we've been talking about are even made possible, because the money coming in through the tithes is not going towards compensating these local leaders for all that they're doing in the local congregations. Even though we know for a fact the upper echelon are being compensated. But as I mentioned earlier, we still come across Mormons who insist that that's not true.
On page 3 later on in Quinn's book, he writes, "As early as December 1837, a conference in Missouri formally voted for, or sustained in a common consent, a resolution to provide remuneration. It would be a, quote, a fund ready at all times to assist the poor with, and also to compensate the servants of the Lord for their services in attending to the business of the church and for other necessary purposes," end quote. It goes on and says, "In 1944, the centennial of Joseph Smith's murder in Illinois, the Midwest Publishing House of the Utah Church printed a handbook of the Restoration stating, quote, the great body of officers in the church serve without salary, contributing their time and often their means to the prosecution of their work. Only the general authorities of the church and others who devote substantially all of their time to its work are compensated. In the main, it operates without a paid ministry," end quote.
Now, that's an interesting statement, and folks, you need to be reminded, this was printed in 1944. Okay, right in the middle of the 20th century. But let's go over that statement again. How many average Latter-day Saints know that this statement even exists? I would probably say that very, very few would even know that it exists. Who has ever heard of a handbook on the Restoration?
I hadn't.
I hadn't either. But when it says the great body of officers in the church serve without salary, contributing their time and often their means to the prosecution of their work, only the general authorities of the church and others who devote substantially all of their time to its work are compensated. In the main, it operates without a paid ministry. But yet we have heard general authorities who fall into that category deny that they're paid anything at all. I think Joseph Fielding Smith was one of those. I think also Thomas Monson was also a leader in the church that denied that they were receiving compensation. The fact is, of course they were receiving compensation. How could a person who was devoting substantially all of their time to the work of the church be able to pay their bills if they weren't being compensated? Are we going to assume, for instance, that a general authority such as Gordon B. Hinckley, who was a president of the church and worked his entire life for the church, had enough money squirreled away for his retirement that he was able to cover his own expenses during that entire period in which he was the president of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints?
Well, we have code words now instead of saying salary, because if you ask a mission president's wife if she receives a salary, she'll say no, and it's not a salary. But there, here are the code words, and this is what Quinn writes at the bottom of page 3. It's sometimes been called a stipend. By the late 20th century, its preferred designation was living allowance or church allowance. Now, Bill, let me ask you this. If you receive a living allowance, then I guess you're not being paid because it's not a quote-unquote salary. See, I disagree that whether you're getting a salary or whether you're getting a living allowance, that's money you're going to use for your living expenses. And so it's money that you receive, and you should pay income tax on the money that you receive.
And I think you're absolutely correct. I just wish that Latter-day Saints would be more informed on this subject and quit telling people that their leaders get virtually nothing. Even the word stipend becomes really a bit dishonest because it is compensation. And let me just say this in closing. I really don't have a problem with LDS leaders being compensated. I don't see that that is any sign that a church is in a state of apostasy, especially when you have 1 Corinthians chapter 9, where Paul takes the time to discuss the importance of a paid clergy, allowing them to focus on the duties of the church. I don't have a problem with that at all. I do have a problem, however, when you tell me that the leadership is getting nothing when in fact they are getting something.
Well, one of the appendices, Appendix 4 on page 174, goes through and lists the net value of what the leaders of the church died with and what they're worth in 2010 money. And we're going to talk about it tomorrow.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism. How would you like to have Mormonism Research Ministry address your church on the subject of Mormonism? MRM's Bill McKeever and Eric Johnson have spoken at many Christian churches all over the country. You see, they can tailor their presentation to meet your church's needs. Anything from a one-day basic introduction to a weekend symposium. You'll find these PowerPoint presentations clear, articulate, and presented in a Christ-honoring fashion. So let your pastor know today that you'd like to have MRM speak at your church. Write us at contact@mrm.org.